step up. I think that you should step up.
Rise up.
You're tuned to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. You just heard the Ralph Nader Hour with Ralph Nader and crew. After a little station business, you'll hear Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund at 7 o'clock. Please stay tuned.
This is Attorney Michael Smith from Law & Disorder Radio. Sunday, this coming Sunday, January 17th at 6 p.m., Heidi Boghossian and I will be bringing you a special two-hour program on our founder, attorney Michael Ratner, on his long-awaited memoir, Moving the Bar, My Life as a Radical Lawyer. We hear from nearly 20 people who knew and worked with Michael. Michael was the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights and the outstanding human rights lawyer of his generation. Tune in, learn about his legal battles from the Attica prison uprising to his representation of Julian Assange. You'll be able to order his book. We hope you'll be listening. It'll be a good way to start off the new year. That'll be on Sunday, January 17th at 6 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM or live stream it at WBAI.org.
We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name's Jim Freund. To start the new year off, I thought it would be fun to hold an in-depth discussion with our media critic, Dan Persons, about some of our most recent genre releases, especially Soul and Wonder Woman 1984, along with the future of genre cinema and a recap of some other things we have watched. Stay tuned. I am Jim Freund. With me is Daniel Persons, or Dan Persons, who does regular reviews in Hour of the Wolf, and he's been doing it for, I don't know how long. So people have been hearing Dan doing reviews on movie reviews, I should say media reviews, given the, a year without movies in theaters, with the exception of...
I've been calling it the year without superheroes, which is fine by me. Okay, I am the house critic for Hour of the Wolf, the house media critic, shall we say, for Hour of the Wolf. In addition to that, I've also been a regular contributor over at Tor.com, mostly doing, I guess they would be called listicles at the moment, you know, the top 10 animated films that'll make you cry, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I am also a proprietor over at MightyMoviePodcast.com, which was originally the home for my Mighty Movie Podcast, and is now sort of a catch-all for the things that I am doing online. I've also got a YouTube channel. You can look for Upstart Company. And that's the name of the channel there. And I am doing various and sundry video things, including most recently Historama 3D, which is an experiment in taking various types of public domain content and converting it to 3D, just to give it a sort of an interesting and curious recontexting.
We're going to have to do a whole show just on that topic.
I would love to.
Yeah. Tell you about how I saw Dial M for Murder in 3D.
That's one of the better ones. That's one.
It really is. Hitch, you know, shooting through the fish tank.
Yeah. Hitch actually understood 3D and actually understood a way of using 3D to tell a story, which...
And Martin Scorsese, and I'm not sure if there are too many other people.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, with... I forget the name of the Scorsese film.
Hugo.
That's right. And it's between Dial M for 3D, Hugo, and Gravity, and that's like...
Yeah, that's about it.
I don't even include Avatar in there, because...
Avatar... is a whole other thing. That was a proof of concept.
Yeah. Yeah. And he proved the concept, and all the studio said, that's great. We can make more money with this. We're just not going to do any freaking thing with it. I've got.
Except he's got how many movies coming out with that premise? He's slated for 5 films in the next 10 years. Yeah. Getting back and you didn't mention my favorite credit of yours because it's in the past, but how I first knew of you was Ciné Fantastique.
Ciné Fantastique, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was a journalist and a critic and for a brief time editor of CFQ.
Yeah, and I thought that was the best of the fanish movie zines.
Because it was.
That's...
And much as it was a fanish publication, and, you know, we did have to kowtow to the studios as much as needed, we did treat ourselves as journalists.
So getting back to what we were talking about, which is one of the recent releases of the most successful movie of the year in terms of box office,
yeah,
which is to say 10 people went instead
of 8. Exactly.
8 people went to see Tenet, and 10 people went to see Wonder Woman.
That was it. The door's out.
Now let me start with a quick prelude. I am not a fan of most of the DC movies. Mm-hmm. I think the last really good one was directed by Tim Burton.
Okay. Line starts at the rear, buddy.
Yeah. And I'm, I'm trying to get people to start a hashtag, which is cut the Snyder release. as opposed. And my understanding is that the cutting the Snyder and releasing the Snyder cut may very well be the last thing that he does for DCEU, which is DC Extended Universe.
Let me give you a theory, and it's only a theory, is that one of the things that I think Wonder Woman 84...
Well, before we get there, I had a little rap that had, you know, it's just about DC versus Marvel.
Okay, go ahead.
Comic books, which is what they were once upon a time, before they were... I mean, there was Captain America. Was it Republic? I think it was Republic, and there was a Superman. Of course, Max Fleischer was genius with those. And Marvel didn't exist at the time. But the difference between a Marvel comic and a DC comic was the DC comic... The cover didn't have anything to do with what was inside the story. Even the frontispiece didn't either, although it came closer. You'd read that issue, and you're pretty much, like, done. The thing is that you didn't have to follow it. It was read and toss. Yeah. Or the way that Harlan Ellison put it is not a coincidence that a comic book takes just about the right amount of time for a bathroom session.
Yes.
And those aren't the words he used. And Marvel, even from the very early Stan Lee, Jack Kirby days, you know, before Chris Claremont and the other folk came in to turn it into more serious stuff, Marvel asked you to really get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Doctor Strange and Fantastic Four and Strange Tales and Nick Fury and all of those. And the movies have continued to fulfill that. The DC movies, not counting the trilogy by Christopher Nolan and not counting some exceptions here and there, were just like the comic books, especially when Zack Snyder is doing them. Mm-hmm. Throwaways.
Yeah.
You watch it, it's like popcorn devoid of content.
Mm-hmm.
Not very good. And that includes Watchmen, which was, you know, supposed to be heavy, man.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. Whereas the Marvel movies, they start bringing in auteur cinema people eventually, not counting, you know, Incredible Hulk. Mm-hmm. But they were getting avant-garde people.
Mm-hmm.
Avant-garde actors. Robert Downey, his career was not at a good place when he did Iron Man. They were using lesser characters. But at the end of each of the movies, maybe Samuel Jackson would show up mid-credits and promise you something and they're building up until they finally created an Avengers. As far as I'm concerned, the only really good one to date. This is, for me, the point. With Marvel movies, and God, those TV shows look weird. Loki and
I don't know what Disney is doing. Disney is doing the same thing with their franchises that they did with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Well, people love this, so let's run it every single day of the week.
Yeah, well, there's that, but it's also, if you take a look at the content.
Yeah, I haven't. I've kind of shied away from actually delving too far.
No, you have to take a look. You really do. The realities are not what they seem. These have the kind of continuity there. Oh, imagine Marvel movies by Charlie Kaufman turned into a TV series. And you're starting to get an idea of where they're going with WandaVision.
I'm curious about WandaVision. I will say that. I saw the trailer for that. I know absolutely nothing about the franchise from which it is born. I forget which Avengers.
It comes out of Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, I know that. The Vision. The Vision, that's what it is, right?
Vision.
Yes.
As he was created by Tony Stark,
yes,
using one of the gemstones.
Right, right.
That goes into the Infinity Stones.
Right.
That goes into Thanos' glove, and that stone is destroyed. They're right. All destroyed. And yet here, after all that destruction, here in a television universe that moves from decade to decade to decade, they find themselves in sort of a sitcom, mm-hmm, except that characters who don't belong start showing up.
Right, right.
And villains start showing up, and reality changes. Loki is weirder than that. Just go to YouTube.
In any case, you know, I'm saying
my expectations for a good Wonder Woman movie, mm-hmm, I have problems with the first, because the first two thirds are wonderful, and then all of a sudden
everybody talks about the ending, the clash at the end. Yeah,
and you know, now that the new movie has come out, Patty Jenkins has told us a little about that.
Yeah, and we probably both read the same articles, and we can fill that in. Let me just say this about WW84 or Wonder Woman 84 or Wonder Woman 1984. I wish they'd make up their minds.
The 84 had nothing to do with the movie. So
what?
Outside of the music and the dress styles, setting the movie in 1984 made no sense.
No, I would disagree with that, but let me just say this about my overall feeling about the film, is that for the first act, for the first hour of it, I was really actively hating it. I was starting to be won over. About an hour into it, I went, oh, it's a comic book movie, which we haven't really gotten from particularly the DC universe. And once I snagged onto that, I was able to relax. It is still a righteous mess, but there are very good things about it. I think the core...
That was why I did that entire rap about what I expected out of a Marvel comic versus a DC comic. It's a DC comic.
It's a DC comic. And it's got, I think, what is a clever villain in Pedro Pascal's role.
Mango, yeah.
In it, Maxwell Lord. I like the idea that he becomes an animate monkey paw. That's a nice idea. I think it grows... Here's the thing, and you had mentioned this about Patty Jenkins. There have been these articles that have been going around in the past few days about how Patty Jenkins had to fight to have both prologues in the film. And for those who haven't seen Wonder Woman 84, all two of you, there's essentially...
Well, I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't able to... Yeah. It was a big decision whether or not to get HBO. It's expensive.
Yes.
They have a lot of good content, but I've already got Netflix and Amazon and Acorn and, most importantly, Turner Classic Movies. Yeah,
we can talk about that, because that's the future there. But the thing about... Here's the thing, is that there are two prologues. The first one is set on Themyscira with Diana Prince as a young girl competing in a competition with lots of older Amazons, and the second is Wonder Woman foiling what appears at first to be a jewelry robbery. It's actually something more than that. And Pat, what it turns out is, as I said, there's been these articles saying Patty Jenkins had to fight to get both of those prologues into the film. And what I think happened, the way Patty Jenkins puts it, and she was sort of dodgy about what her choice was. Patty Jenkins put it as Warner's told me you can have one or the other, but not both. My feeling is that the Themyscira feels more like what the original Wonder Woman film, the first Wonder Woman film, is more of a piece with the first Wonder Woman film than the jewelry heist sequence. And the jewelry heist sequence, I think, is indicative of Warner's, the higher-ups, the business side of Warner's, resting the DCEU away from the filmmakers, because the jewelry heist thing feels more to me like what a marketing team would think is an action film with a dollop of girl power, quote unquote, girl power in it. And the film has a battle overall between what Patty Jenkins originally did with the first Wonder Woman, and what DC is trying to do, and essentially here again, pull the DC franchise away from what was necessarily Zack Snyder's cold, dark, bitter grip.
Yeah, and so, although his credit is still on this,
his credit is still on it, and he's actually credited as producer. I checked.
But a producer doesn't mean
producer much. Still means something. Executive producer don't mean nada. Yeah. Okay, and there's a difference there. The executive producer, what the executive producer is responsible for, is the crushing burden of cashing the check to have their name in the credits. That's what an executive producer is for. Producers actually do something. So, but there's something like 40 producers on the film. So
that's true for most films. There's a line producer.
And God knows how much Zack Snyder was involved. But
I suspect he was involved with the third act of the first film. It's got his fingerprints all over.
That's probably true. That's probably true. But I would say the same thing here about at least as far as the Warner higher ups are concerned, their involvement that resulted in the film being rather choppy and sort of glossing over things like, if you haven't seen the film, Steve Trevor comes back because Diana wishes him back. But he comes back in the body of another person, somebody whose body he has taken over. And throughout the film, they never deal with that issue. There is never a point where they say, oh, my God, you've stolen somebody's life. And even when
and what happened to that person?
What happened to that person? And even when Diana
renounces, I think he became a jazz pianist.
OK, you want to go to Seoul right now? We can do that. No,
just about. we don't need to run this into the ground, but I think you made your point.
I never thought of Seoul being in the DC universe. Oh, my God. it's going to start now. We did it.
I think we did. It'll make a great mashup.
Yes, getting back to Wonder Woman, though, the thing continuing about how they've handled it is flawed, is that even when Diana renounces her wish, it's not because they've stolen somebody's life. It's because she needs to get her power back.
Right.
And even at the
But to me, that's DC Comics.
Do you think so? Do you think they
Yeah, I was never a DC Comics fan for that reason.
Yeah. I will agree with you there. That would be the reason if we were talking about a comic book movie. That's the way they would do it. But
I think that's exactly what this was a comic book movie.
But I think if it was Patty Jenkins with a tighter grip on the wheel, the issue would have been dealt with. Because the first Wonder Woman had a lot more nuance to how it dealt with its issues.
Well, and we'll see. I don't know where they're going to try to fast-track Wonder Woman 3, but we'll see what happens with Cleopatra and with the next Star Wars movie. Which are both
Patty Jenkins. If there is a next Star Wars movie, I wonder whether we're ever going to see another Star Wars movie.
Well, they're talking about, you know, what is it, 2024?
Yeah, that's which is a way of a ways off.
I think that the movie industry, you know, that Tarantino has seen his worst nightmare come true, and he and Nolan, Christopher Nolan, are sitting their hands on hips, and I bleed for them. I really do. Mm-hmm. I understand. Having said that, the movie theater industry, I think, is going to continue in one of two ways. One will be following something like the Alamo Draft House niche, where you have like six or seven films, and they'll be doing festivals in each one, and they're more than theaters. They serve food. It's an experience. Mm-hmm. And the other one is theaters for tentpoles.
With each film, and so the corporate wing doesn't get so antsy about what film is coming out and interferes less and lets the filmmakers do their work with less interference. This is my pipe dream, quite frankly. I'm not.
Yeah. Although it can be done, this is something they need to learn. I sent you an email about a movie Barbara and I watched. Fast Color, was that the name?
Yeah, Fast Color, which I haven't watched yet. I do have it on my list.
Yeah, okay, so here's a movie that is a superhero or supernatural power movie that will probably be a TV series. It plays very much like a pilot. Mm-hmm. And it's got a budget of 25 cents.
Yeah.
And it doesn't suffer for it at all.
Similarly, for another film on Amazon Prime, Vast of Night. Have you watched that yet?
No, I haven't.
It's an incredible film. It was done by a guy, and I think he's out of Texas, who prior to this actually was only directing commercials. And it's an incredible film. It's in some ways a throwback. It's a throwback to a type of filmmaking where the dialogue becomes as important and crucial as the visuals. It's a very filmic experience still, but a lot of it is about the dialogue and people talking about things. And it's an amazing little film. And here again, it was done for an insanely low budget. And it's frankly at the top of my list of the best films this year.
Yeah. One of the reasons I love your reviews is that I see that you're reviewing a movie called blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, what the F? I've never heard of this film. Why is he doing that? And it's always very interesting. And I think that the loss of the rise of the tentpoles and the loss of the average movie that costs way too much, including advertising budget, is going to help the smaller films. I think we will see more from Amazon, probably, God help us, Apple. Certainly
HBO. Yeah, I suspect this is the way it's going to go. Ironically, I was thinking about this, and my opinion of the year was that this was a fabulous year for film because we didn't have...
Change that, cinema.
Yeah, okay. It's a fabulous year for cinema.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, at 99.5 FM. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, and this is a conversation with Dan Persons, recorded last Thursday. And you are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, at 99.5 FM. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund, and this is a conversation with Dan Persons, recorded last Thursday.
And that's why they're able to be turning out these, 10 series of Marvel television series and about 6 Star Wars shows. And with any luck, an independent producer might be able to walk in there and say, I've got an idea that utilizes this craft.
Yeah. Hopefully so. That you did. We'll see how that goes. Do you want to talk about Soul at all? Or
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Because.
Okay. Pixar comes in B minus. I don't know if they've ever had a B. A minus, A, and A plus.
The
only B minus movie I can think of really is The Good Dinosaur, and maybe Cars 3.
Yeah. They have a few, and I didn't see Cars 3. I avoided Cars 3. I don't want to even think about
Cars 3. Reason. Yeah.
This film, I would say, I'm not going to do this because I actually hate giving ratings. So I'm not going to give it a rating, okay? I don't like being...
I wasn't rating it as so much placing it in terms of my favorites.
Yeah, okay. I see. This film, I think, continues what I've been seeing with Pete Docter in the last few films, which is that I get the feeling he tends, and let me say this. I like Soul, and yes, I teared up at the end. Inside Out was that he worked really hard to try to cover every sort of aspect of human emotion. And so you had theme parks, and you had memory modules, and you had the archives, and you had a train of consciousness and a realm of abstraction. And once again, I teared up, and it's a great movie. It's a great movie. But
the saddest part to me is the loss of that doll, that memory.
Actually, you know what got to me is that at the... near the very end, when she changes her mind and she runs back home and she confesses to her parents and they hug her, and it's just the sort of sigh that it gets me.
Yeah.
It gets me right there, and I lose it at that point. So
although it's not the single most emotional moment in any Pixar film, and I know you will not disagree with me, comes about 17 and a half minutes into Up.
Well, yes. Yeah. No argument. And we'll leave it there. A great film. And it is a great film. And the rest of it, I think, is pretty damn great, too.
Yeah, it goes from being a great film to being a good film.
It carries. I still think it is a great film.
Oh, yeah.
Um, But now we've got soul, and what he was doing with emotions in Inside Out, he's now doing with spirituality.
Yes.
In this film. And I think the metaphor for the way the film feels for me is that there is a sequence set in a place called the Hall of Everything. Just to fill in, there's a jazz musician. Hold on.
We just have to explain to those who haven't seen it, because it is, after all, available only on Disney Plus.
Right,
at
right.
The time.
There's a jazz musician voiced by Jamie Foxx, and he dies, and he...
A wannabe jazz musician.
He's a jazz musician.
He's a teacher.
He's a good musician. But he dies. John Batiste does his piano work, by the way.
Yeah.
But he dies, and he goes to... He's on the way to the afterworld. He escapes from there lands up in the realm where proto-souls are being raised and trained for their trip.
It's all very Theodore Sturgeon or Henry Kuttner.
Yeah.
It's in that line of 40s science fiction, metaphysical comedy with serious overtones or undertones, science fiction, and they do it well.
Yeah, they do it well, but here's the thing, and again, this is sort of my feeling about Pete Docter and, if you want, Overkill, is that in that realm, there is a place called the Hall of Everything, and that supposedly has everything about the earthly experience contained within it. We spend less than 5 minutes in that Hall of Everything. So here is a film where you spend less than 5 minutes covering everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the
other... Because for all of its quality and all of its brilliant animation, they're asking you to use your mind's eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I can agree with that.
And that also relates to, and we won't spoil it, but that relates to how the film ends.
Right, it's true too. The thing about that, though, is that, and Pixar tends to do this a lot, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, is that if you've only seen the trailers for Soul, that is not what the film is about. That isn't the plot of the film. And it's not really a spoiler, because it is what the story of the film.
It's the launching point.
Everything that you've seen in the trailer is the launching point of the film. It's actually about this musician becoming or being assigned as mentor to a soul, number 22. And by the way, but my significant other pointed this out for me, is that in the sequence where he's introduced to number 22, before that, somebody else is assigned to soul number 6,443,200,000. And then he is introduced to soul number 22. So you get
been there a couple of billion years.
That soul has been there around, voiced by Tina Fey, by the way, who also does a good job. But the actual story of the film is that they stumble their way out of this way station and down to Earth. He's trying to get back to his body, which is in a coma in a hospital. And there is also there what they call an emotional support cat, which I don't know if there's actually a thing, but that's actually a thing. But you go with it for the story. The point is that the musician lands in the cat, and the soul and number 22 winds up in the musician's body, and that's the plot of the film, is him now trying to get back to his own body.
And they haven't done a plot like that since Dick Powell ended up inside of a horse. And I forget who the other horse was.
Yeah. And that raises an interesting issue, because in Soul, what you've got are the two characters that you see there. And when the musician talks, he talks with Tina Fey's voice. And when the cat talks with Jamie Foxx's voice. And it actually works better in All of Me, because in All of Me,
Steve Martin, still
talking in his voice, but acting like Lily Tomlin. So, I mean, that's my feeling about Soul, though, is that basically all the stuff that you think the film is going to be about is in the first half hour. And I forgot to mention the Zen Pirates in there as well. There are also Zen Pirates in that first
half
hour.
There's a lot of adventure, just like there is an Inside Out.
Yeah. And
Let me ask you a philosophical question. Are these films for kids?
My impression with this is that Pixar is really moving away from kids.
Yeah.
How is a kid supposed to connect with this film? It's dealing with...
I don't know, but if you are a kid, I would ask you, please send me an email talking about your feeling about it to Jim, J-I-M, at OurWolf.com, HOURWOLF. As long as you are 15 or under, I really want to hear your take on Soul.
You know, you can say that kids will connect with the animation, and there's lots of fun animation, and quite frankly,
little kids are going to love it. Yeah,
quite frankly, this again pushes the envelope for Pixar in terms of animation, just in terms of the visuals. This film is incredible. And
it is approaching not animation.
As far as CBS All Access is concerned, I am on there for Discovery. And I waited
on TV. It's on Channel 2 in New York.
That's the first season.
Yeah. They'll get around to the second season.
Yeah, I'm sure they will, but I wanted to see it now.
And I started watching Picard and stopped.
I'm sorry.
Stopped watching.
Yeah, well, Picard. Yeah, you made the right call there. God knows what. New Frontiers, is that what the... I think it's Star Trek New Frontiers, which is the one that's supposed to be the Christopher Pike one,
right,
which I will check out because...
I like Chris Greenwood, but, you know, outside of that. Right.
Third season of Discovery, in case anybody cares, is... my reaction to it is essentially the same reaction I had with Voyager. It's like, I'm sticking with it for now. Seems to be getting better. If you remember, it wasn't until the third season that Next Gen actually found its footing. So,
yeah, that's absolutely true. But then it was the best of them.
Yeah. The cast of Discovery is overall very good. I am delighted that Doug Jones has gotten his due and is... He's not really the lead of the show, but he's, you know.
I'll settle for The Shape of Water, thank you.
was that him in Shape of Water?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely it is.
You know, I haven't seen that film yet. I keep going, I've got to see this film, and for some reason.
Oh, my God. There are about 400 reasons for you, especially.
I you don't need to tell them to me because I tell them to myself. I don't know why I'm dragging my feet on seeing that, but I'll get to it.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple. James Brolin is the bad guy. That's never happened before. But and he's one. They're all wonderful. The lead, Sally. She always does Mike Lee films.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Happy Go Lucky and stuff like that. She's absolutely wonderful. The cast is wonderful, but yes, Doug Jones plays the creature.
Mm. I'll have to check that. He was a good interview. He's one of the people that I've interviewed in my many and varied and sundry guises. So
in our 45-minute show at most, we've gone about 64 minutes.
Yes!
Which is okay, because we will still put this up on YouTube and or Facebook.
Okay, that's cool.
And people can see the entire thing there, and it has been interesting. But we've discussed about three movies.
Which is normal. Which even when we had 2 hours, we said, we're going to discuss this and this and this and this, and then we spend 2 hours talking about two films.
Yeah, but we did, however, cover a couple of things, which is the future of the movie houses.
Yes.
Of cinema. Cinema isn't going anywhere.
No. Yeah, I would agree with you. As
they're ramping up, hopefully, and of course, TV screens will be getting larger.
Yes.
And it's hard not to get one that's 4K.
Yeah.
Because now what they're selling is 8K. I'll settle for 4.
Do we have any time? Do we have a few seconds for me to run down my, and it's actually not a top 10 list. It's like a top
5. Yeah.
Okay. Let me just run that down, because this is my top 9 for 2020. The unofficial number 10, because it wasn't really released in 2020, it was in 2002. But I saw this at like the very end of the year, and it was like the perfect panacea for what the year has been. Japanese film Versus, which we may run the review. Which you may run the review another week.
Soon.
Okay. The rest of the list, this is all 2020. Coco D, Coco Da, the Swedish-Danish horror film. Zombie for Sale, the Korean zombie comedy, which is delightful. Sela and the Spades, which was an interesting African-American take on Shakespearean intrigue set in an elite high school, elite private high school. Lose the Flower of Evil, a kind of religious horror film. Wolf Walkers, the Cartoon Saloon animated film.
I will get my 2 weeks free Apple only to watch that, because every Cartoon Saloon film that I have seen, there are three.
Yeah.
People only think of two, the two Irish ones.
Right, the two Irish runs, and then there's The Breadwinner, which admittedly I haven't seen for specific reasons, which I shall not go into here.
It's lovely. I prefer the Irish ones.
Yeah.
But it's lovely.
Yeah.
And Wolfwalker, I cannot wait to see.
Wolfwalker is all of a piece. Bacurau, the Brazilian
kind. Which I never heard of until you mentioned it, and then it ended up on Manolo Dargis's Best 10 list.
Yeah, and deservedly so. Kind of mashup of John Carpenter, non-genre Attack on Precinct 13, along with a bit of near future political commentary. Really nice.
That's not the one that's yet another take on Attack the Block, is it?
No, it's not. No, it's not. This is about a small town that gets assaulted by an elite team of mercenaries.
Okay. There was an American version ripping off Attack the Block.
Yeah. This is not that. No, this is Baccarat. Yeah. Diablo Rojo, PTY, a wonderful Evil Dead kind of film out of Panama, of all places. Divine Love, another Brazilian, rather caustic religious commentary film set again in the near future. And then we talked about it earlier on, Vast of Night, which is just a wonderful independently produced, quote unquote, alien invasion film, but with much more soul than you think something like that would have.
Yeah. Well, the one that tops my list is Wolfwalkers. Might even be tonight for me.
Do it, because it is a wonderful film.
Yeah, I have no intention of staying with Apple TV, but that film I will see.
Yeah, it's worth your while.
Yeah,
heartily recommend it. All of these films are heartily recommended, except Coco D. Coco Da. Coco D. Coco Da is a rough film.
Okay, fair enough. One time we will discuss the venues.
Yeah.
The nature of the venues, because having something like HBO, it's like there are all these films that I can't see.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get Spirited Away. You can't rent it.
Yeah.
You can't get it because it's in the HBO library.
Yeah.
But, you know, whereas Netflix and Amazon and services emulating them, Hulu, and all those, they're just rotating from one to the next. And you see a headline saying, oh, my God, this great, great film is leaving Netflix on this date. You've got to watch it now before it leaves. And then the next day it's left Netflix and it's on Amazon.
Yeah.
Big deal.
I was going through The Outer Limits, the original two seasons of The Outer Limits. And I got about halfway through the first season and then... It's gone.
It's on somewhere.
Not that I can find it. It was on Prime Video, and then all of a sudden...
Well, with commercials, it's on Comet.
Oh, okay. Maybe I can track it down on Comet. Let me look on that.
It's bad enough to be on Comet, yeah.
We do what we have to do.
Indeed. Okay. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Once again, let me just remind people that this is the mightymoviepodcast.com is where people find Dan. You find me mostly on Facebook in the Hour of the Wolf group. But if you want to write me, especially if you're a younger person and want to talk to me about Pixar films, not Toy Story. I like the Toy Stories, but that's not my question. Write me at jim@ourwolf.com. And we will do this again, Dan.
Please.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
been listening to Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you all so much for listening and for your support in a very troubled year. We're hoping this one will be better. We'll be off next week, but we'll return on January 16th at 7 a.m. with an interview with writer Tom Doyle, who will also read for you. Stay tuned for Any Saturday with David Rothenberg. Good morning.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. You just heard Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. After a little station business, you'll hear Any Saturday with David Rothenberg at 8 o'clock. Please, stay tuned.
Hi, this is Margaret Flowers with Clearing the Fog, speaking truth to expose the forces of greed. Clearing the Fog is a radio program that you'll hear on WBAI, Pacifica Radio, 99.5 FM in New York City on Tuesday mornings at 11 a.m. And on Clearing the Fog, I interview activists, authors, journalists, academics about what's going on in the social movements and what is the reality that you're not going to hear on a corporate sponsored radio station. These are people that dig into the facts to let you know without the corporate spin how things are actually going and what you're not being told by the corporate media. And Clearing the Fog is so fortunate to be a regular show now on WBAI so that you can hear this content that you won't hear in other places, certainly not on commercial radio. So please value WBAI. Running a radio station is not something that can be done for free. WBAI doesn't have these corporate sponsors that give it, you know, large amounts of money. It's really driven by you. It's independent. It's listener supported. And that money is needed each month to keep the doors open to the station, to keep the equipment functioning, to keep, you know, a few staff who can keep that radio station going. The people who host the programs are not getting paid to host these programs. We do it because it's a labor of love, but there does have to be staff who can keep that radio station going. And that's what the wonderful folks at WBAI do. So please support WBAI by going to WBAI.org and making a donation today. Thank you.
On this week's show of Working Class Heroes Radio, we talk with Chris Smalls, a former Amazon worker who was fired after organizing a walkout to protest the violation of COVID-19 safety standards by Amazon. We'll talk with him about his experience, what conditions were like for Amazon workers, and what led him to help found the Congress of Essential Workers. We will also break down the new Tax the Rich campaign launched here in New York State by a coalition of progressive organizations. So make sure to tune in on Saturday, January 16th at 6 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, the radio station for working class New York.
Saturday at 7 p.m. on WBAI, the story of an autistic child whose parents are beginning to crack under the pressure.
I know it's a big deal.
She has problems, Gavin. There's things that I don't know how to do. I'm not equipped to deal with all the doctors and the tests and her therapy.
And you'll have the school and the doctors to help you figure out all that.
We had an agreement.
But things change.
We see events unfold through the eyes and lucid thoughts of 13-year-old Lucy.
Something is changing. I'm watching her face to see if she can feel it.
And Lucy's mom begins to see their lives in new and unexpected ways.
I draw?
Yes, of course you can. I have some work to do, too.
I draw Lucy!
Oh, that would be lovely.
Lucy by Damian Atkins, starring Roxanne Hart and Lucy DeVito. That's Saturday at 7 p.m. on WBAI New York.
Wash your hands, everybody, and everybody. Wash your hands. My people uptown, wash your hands. My people downtown, wash your hands. People from the East Coast, wash your hands. People from the West Coast, wash your hands.
That's right. First and foremost, please listen close. Take your time, wash. Use a lot of soap from the front to the back, back to the front. Sing the hook where you at. That's exactly what we want. You catch a little fever, shortness of breath, slight little cough. You feel it in your chest. You should call your doctor. Doctor know what's best. Don't go run into the hospital because you could be a threat. Coronavirus.
Don't you get it?
Don't you get it?
Can't you see?
Can't you see?
We are living in a state of emergency.
Epidemic.
Pandemic.
Social distance. Non-existence. Don't resist this. Get gone in an instance if you miss this.
This is WBAI, and this is Fred Eagle Smith for WBAI in New York. Stick it in your ear.
All right.
You've got to start off each day with a song. Now, even when things go wrong, you feel better, you even look better. I'm here to tell you that you'll be a go-getter. Now, the way that you shake my hand will tell me how I stand. Now, isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now, you know that you can't go wrong. If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day with a song.
Oh, sing it, Jimmy boy.
Even when things go wrong,
sing it for the hoi polloi.
You feel better, you even look better. Ah, that music, it does something to me. I wish I knew what it was. Last night I was telling Umbriago about my latest concerto called Tony's Pushcart. He said, Tony's Pushcart, how does it go? I said, it doesn't go, you have to push it. I got a million of them, a million of them. Now you know that you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day. Boys, please, soft, soft, a little more fortissimo. I want to relate a yarn. Turn back the pages of history and what do you see? Madison Square Garden or Odeo. And there I was, interviewing a prize-winning cow. I asked her to tell the radio public how she feels. She said, moo. She's contented, I'm contented, but her husband ain't. So what happens? The bull ups to me, I ups to him, and without any preliminaries, I'm flat on my back. Being a gentleman, I apologized. But the bull's not satisfied, he demands an autopsy. So I grabs him by the tail, and what happens? He flips his tail, I lands on his head. He flips his head, I lands on his tail. He's playing ping pong with me, and I'm losing. Just then the bull is ready to charge again. I gets an idea, I start singing south to the border down Mexico way. And what happens? The bull starts crying. But irregardless, I keeps on singing. This time with the castanets. That's too much for the bull, he collapses. A cheer goes up, I'm saved, and the moral is, you gotta start off each day with a song. You've gotta start off each day with a song.
Oh boy, you're singing now.
Even when things go wrong.
Oh Jimmy, you're a wow.
You feel better. You know, I'm walking down Broadway and who taps me on the shoulder? My pal hit him in the head, Schwartz. I said, who are you working for now? And he said, the same bunch, the wife and the kids. Now, isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah. you start off each day with a song.
Well, if that musical outburst was Jimmy Durante, that means I'm David Rothenberg, and the program is Any Saturday on listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM in the Big Apple. And from where I'm sitting, and I have a view of Lower Manhattan, the rain looks like it's coming to a halt. And if you're not in this particular area, if you're listening on the west coast of Florida or in the mountains of Colorado, and we do have listeners there, or in San Francisco or Iowa, or in a cell in Sing Sing, or Crown Heights or Harlem, or Soho, or Ho-Ho, or Jersey City. The weather in New York is warm for January, and there's so much that's going on. Well, I was shocked that last night with the news that Kim Kardashian has filed for divorce against Kanye West. And if you can absorb that, then you can deal with practically anything. And my source on this news is impeccable. I won't share her name because privacy is important. So much is happening. Everyone and on the news is assessing what happened on January 6th. I think that there are a couple of things that weren't apparent immediately that have come out that I find astounding. One is, and this was not initially evident, that that they had a noose to execute Mike Pence. I mean, we heard some of that, but as it comes out that the chants that I've heard in subsequent tapes, Mike Pence for 4 years was so obsequious. I always said that if he was missing in action, you'd have to look up Donald Trump's tuchus, because that's where he was. He was the epitome of the yes man, and then thrown under the bus, turned against by Donald because he was going to acknowledge what was evident, that the Electoral College was, in fact, indicating that Joe Biden was the president. And on the basis of that, at the end of 4 years of yesing all over the place, he became a target for assassination. We're talking serious business here. Mike Pence, the man with the bug on his head, he was a target. He turns against everyone. There's only one thing that's important to him, and that's him, Donald. One of the assessments that which you might suspect, but was rather clarified, is who knows what Donald believes, but what he was conveying to those who, the Kool-Aid drinkers, was that he did win the election because he had the most white votes, and they don't count the black votes. And he was investigating mostly Milwaukee, Atlanta, and Philadelphia, cities with large African-American populations, to discredit them. The simple fact is that Democrats never win the majority. Obama never did. Kerry didn't. Hillary didn't. I think you have to go back to Harry Truman. No, probably FDR before you find that white Americans went for the Democrats. It's a rather astounding history. Maybe LBJ against Barry Goldwater. Probably. But African-American, Latino, Asian-American votes on top of 45%, say, of white votes has provided the difference for Democrats over the years. And no less so in this instance. I think what happened, though, is that more, not the percentage of African-Americans, but the percentage who showed up at the polls was greater. The percentage was always there, but the turnout, because black folks had a clear picture of what a fascist president, could you imagine what the second term would have been? What would have been inflicted on us? Because he had no policy. In the last 4 months, he was impervious to the pandemic. It was all about him, with no plans, no policy, no attention paid to the running of the country. It was him. He lived for the rallies. Extraordinary. One of the other things that emerged I wasn't clear on it until this story in the Times on Thursday. It's as lawmakers entered the Capitol on Wednesday for one of the most solemn enterprises in American government, the impeachment of a president, Representative Lauren Boebert, B-O-E-B-E-R-T, was causing a spectacle before even making it into the chamber. She pushed her way through the newly installed metal detectors and ignored police officers who asked her to stop so they could check her with a handheld wand. This reprised a standoff from the evening before when Ms. Boebert, a freshman Republican from Colorado, the Western Slope, if you will, Colorado's become a blue state, Denver, Boulder having such an impact. But on the other side of the mountains, the Western Slope, which is sparsely populated, well, compared to Denver, that's where the trouble is. She refused to show guards what was inside her handbag as she entered the building. In both cases, she was eventually granted access, but not before engineering a made-for-Twitter moment that delighted the far right. After joining her colleagues on Wednesday, Ms. Boebert, B-O-E-B-E-R-T, took to the House floor to denounce the vote on impeachment that passed a few hours later. Where's the accountability for the left after encouraging and normalizing violence? Ms. Boebert asked loudly, arguing that Democrats had tolerated excessive violence last summer during the unrest over racial justice. I call bullcrap when I hear the Democrats demanding unity. I love the fact that there's been much of that on Fox, that the comparing street protests by average Joes with the invasion of the Capitol building and threats to murder elected officials. The equation is rather startling. The Times article continues, the standoff at the metal detector was a characteristic stunt by Ms. Boebert. She is only 10 days into her term, but has already arranged several episodes that showcased her brand of far-right defiance as a conspiracy theorist who proudly boasts of carrying her Glock handgun to Washington. She is only one of 435 House members, but Ms. Boebert, who's 34 years old, represents an incoming faction of the party for whom breaking the rules and gaining notoriety for doing it is exactly the point. There are two others that they cited. There's a trend in both parties, members who seem more interested in dunking on folks